Listener, for some, summer is their favorite season. With travel picking up, kids out of school, and adventures on the horizon. For others, juggling everything can feel overwhelming, and you end up just surviving the season instead of thriving. As someone who covers heavy true crime stories week after week, I know how important it is to protect your peace and build in time for yourself, even during the busy summer months. I make sure to carve out moments that help me reset so I can keep showing up fully for my work and life. Therapy can help you better understand your needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a version of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, with over 30,000 therapists and more than 6 million people helped globally. They have an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 from over 1.7 million client reviews. Their therapists are fully licensed in the U.S. and work according to a strict code of conduct. BetterHelp does the matching work for you with a short questionnaire so you can focus on your goals. And if it is not the right fit, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com. 903 East Princeton Avenue sits on the northeast side of Spokane, Washington, a modest single-story place on a street like 10,000 others in the inland Northwest. The lawns are mostly kept. The cars are mostly older. Nobody has very much, but most people have enough. In the summer of 2020, three people were living in that house. And in the early morning hours, one of those three people called 911. It was not yet six. She was screaming. By the time the Spokane police got to the house, one of the other two was beyond their help. The third was already gone, running through the gray pre-dawn streets on foot, 10 blocks out and closing. This was not a robbery. It was not a fight between strangers. It was something colder and more intimate. Anthony Brines was 25. A court file will tell you how he died, and almost nothing about how he lived. That's usual in the trade. The killer gets the trial and the defense and the appeal. Years of paper, all of it circling the question of him. So here's what is known about the man on the other side of it. Anthony Brines worked as a correctional officer. He was good at it. The people who worked with him said it was because he could read a room and de-escalate it. Because he treated even the incarcerated men in his charge as people. He spent his working life around the consequences of other people's worst decisions, and he had learned, somehow, not to let it close him off. The descriptions of him are remarkably consistent, intelligent, kind-hearted, compassionate, a natural athlete who liked the mountains and the lakes and the wide open country east of the city, a man with an easy laugh who brought a little light into a room. It did not need to be the center of it. None of that shows up in a case file. It shows up in the people who loved him and the way they each reached for the same handful of words. And there's the bitter irony in it. The same softness that made him good at a hard job, the readiness to see the person and not the worst thing they had done, is what let him take in a younger man who had nothing. It's what put him in a bedroom with a person willing to kill him. He had a brother, Christopher Walker, who shared his birthday. Two brothers born on the same day, a shared day that, for their whole lives, had been a thing they had together. Christopher would later stand up in a courtroom and try to explain what it was to lose him and find the ordinary words for it that were too small to carry the weight. To understand how Anthony Brines came to be sharing his home with the man who would kill him, you have to go back to a marriage and to this particular modern loneliness that runs underneath this whole story. like a buried wire. Anthony was married. He and his wife, Haley Davis, had married in October of 2019, less than a year before the killing. By the summer of 2020, the marriage was in trouble. They were having problems, the sort that leads to the word divorce. They had in fact begun moving in that direction. Though the marriage had never been legally dissolved, they were, in the language of the court records, separated in spirit, if not on paper. A married couple coming apart, with all the wreckage and ambivalence and unfinished feelings that coming apart involves. Haley had, at some point in that separation, met someone else, a stranger summoned out of the anonymous churn of the internet into the middle of a real life. The stranger was a 19-year-old named Edward Martinez. He was from Sacramento, California, several states south, a young man with no roots in Spokane, and, as far as the records show, not much of anything anchoring him anywhere. They connected, and at some point, the connection moved from the screen into the physical world. And Edward Martinez came to Spokane, and the arrangement that would end in blood fell into place. Edward Martinez moved into the house on Princeton Avenue, the house where Anthony Bryan lived. He moved into the home of the husband of the woman he was seeing, and the three of them lived there together, Anthony, Haley, and Haley's young boyfriend, for the better part of 3 months, from June to August of 2020. The geometry of it was its own kind of strange. A husband, his wife, and his wife's new boyfriend, all under the same roof. Everything looked unremarkable from the outside. There were no police calls in those months, no reported blow-ups, no signs to the wider world that anything was wrong. There was a practical dimension to all this. Martinez and Haley did not have much money to their names, certainly not enough to go back to Sacramento. Anthony Bryan's, the man being cuckolded under his own roof, casually absorbed them both into his own home and life. And Anthony Bryan's was still in love with his wife, still trying. Martinez moved in thinking he was stepping into the cleared out space a previous man had vacated. Instead, he was moving into another man's marriage, another man's home, another man's life. And that other man, far from resenting him, welcomed him. Bryan's loved his wife, and because he loved her, he tried to befriend the young man she had brought home. He tried to help her out. The two of them became friends, sharing a house, sharing meals, trying to make this impossible arrangement work, trying to be decent in a situation that gave him every excuse not to be. For nearly 3 months, by all outward appearances, it did work. The records describe the household as functioning, seemingly without any issues, and it held until the small hours of August 13th, 2020. And then the man Anthony had taken in took it apart with a knife in the dark.
911, what are you recording?
Hello, my husband is down here at my home.
What, ma'am, I barely hear you. What's going on there?
Please don't do this to me.
Ma'am, what is the location? Hello, sir. Ma'am.
Hello, is anyone there?
Yes, ma'am. This is 911. What? Where are you at right now?
I'm pleading unstable the whole time. She's not breathing well. And the correctional officer, I can hear his breath through the wounds. Just relax, please, Anthony. I have you. You're okay.
Ma'am, you're with him right
yes,
now?
Yes, I'm covering his wounds right now.
Where's the person that
stabbed him? He's trying to run away.
He ran away?
Edward Martinez has to be looked at hard now. He was 19 years old in August of 2020. He had come up from Sacramento with nothing much, a young man drifting into the city where he knew no one but the woman from the app, dependent on the household he had inserted himself into without the money to leave it. He was young, he was rootless, and he was a guest in another man's house living on that man's generosity. The night of August 12, 2020 began by all reports as an ordinary night in that not ordinary household. The three of them were together in the house. They were drinking. At some point, they were also using marijuana. Then, later, they got out a Ouija board. Three people drinking, a little high, pushing a planchette around a board in the dark, asking the empty air its questions. The three of them bent over a board meant to summon the dead, hours before one of them would become one. As the night wore on, the drinking continued. The evening turned towards sex. It was Martinez who suggested it. This was not something that happened to Martinez. He proposed it. The others agreed. They went to the bedroom. They began, and almost immediately, Martinez had a problem. He was unable to participate. He could not, in the clinical language of the court record, get aroused. He blamed the alcohol. Whatever the cause, the encounter he proposed was not going the way he imagined it, and he was the one who could not perform. He got up. He said he needed to use the bathroom, and he left the room. While he was gone, the other two continued. Anthony Brines and his wife, a married couple, estranged but still married, still bound by whatever was left between them, continued without him. And when Martinez came back to the bedroom, that is what he found. The two of them together and him outside. The proposer of the whole thing, now standing aside as a stranger. Haley saw him come back in. She asked him if he was okay. A simple question. And Martinez said yes. He said it was okay. The knife was in the living room. Edward Martinez had to leave the bedroom, walk to the living room, find the knife, take it up, and carry it back. He came back into the bedroom with the knife, held where they could not see it. He got Anthony and Haley to turn, to reposition themselves so that Brian's back was facing him. He staged it. He maneuvered the man who had befriended him into the one position that would let him put a knife into a back that could not see it coming. And then, listener, he began to stab.
What color is your house?
My house?
The house that you're at. Come on. Help me, Haley. Haley, come out front. Make yourself known to officers.
I can't.
Because the sooner you come out, the sooner we can help him. Okay, come out front.
Anthony immediately felt it. Haley heard Anthony say, "You're hurting me." Martinez did not stop. He stabbed Anthony Brines in the back again and again, and Anthony, wounded, began to move, to struggle, the body's blind animal effort to get away from the thing that is killing it. And this, by his own words later, is what he found inconvenient. Brines would not hold still, so Martinez pushed him. He shoved the wounded man off the bed and down onto the floor. And on the floor, with Anthony Brines bleeding from the wounds already in his back, Edward Martinez, in his own chilling phrase, finished the job. He stabbed him in the chest. He stabbed him in the abdomen. He kept going. When it was over, Anthony Brines had been stabbed approximately 20 times. Haley was screaming now. She had grabbed the phone, and she was dialing 911, and she was screaming for help into the early morning dark. And Martinez, the job finished, noticed her. He crossed to her. He picked her up by her arms, physically lifted her, and he put her on the bed.
Come on out.
Who else is in here?
Make my dog sleep.
Who else is in here?
Really?
Where's our victim at? Dog's friendly? Hi, dog.
Hi, puppy. No, it's okay. Where's he at?
Justin!
He's in here.
Justin!
Keep that door open.
Keep that door open so partners can come in.
Spokane police!
Anybody else in here, man? Yes.
Yeah, we need med supplies now!
Bro, we need chest seals, bro. In the back!
Medics in now, please.
He's still alive, but... Hey, partner, Spokane police. I got a faint pulse still, but... Got it?
Now, 30s.
Several.
Bulbs, yeah.
Okay, quickly. I know this is traumatic, and I'm going to have a bunch of questions.
This is okay.
We got to start with the very basic.
He's not from here. He doesn't know the area very well. His name is Edward Andrew Martinez. He's from Sacramento, California.
Okay.
We'll talk to you.
Where was he last seen?
He was begging me to come out with him. I was in the bedroom holding him.
Come out where?
He begged me to take him somewhere. He didn't grab the cars. He begged me to drive him somewhere.
Where did he go?
I don't know. The only place he knows is J&K Liquor Up.
Last time you saw him, what was he wearing?
He was wearing blue denim shorts, and he was wearing dark blue loafers, and he was wearing a t-shirt. I don't remember what color it was.
You don't remember?
No, I only saw his bottom half. I was letting him to get out.
Everywhere, upper torso, a couple on the back.
Let's go.
We have one more sticker. Got an uncovered stab wound upper right.
Yeah.
You want to start compression?
Yeah,
we're going to start compression.
We're going to work him here. We're just going to go.
That's it. Let's go.
Do you need another sticker? Does it matter at this point?
If you have one.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Leaking big time. And we're going to
just want it. You just want to leave us with every sticker you got. That'd be great.
How do you know him?
We met online a few weeks ago.
Were you guys in a dating relationship or something?
Yeah, we were talking online for a week or two, and I went down to California, picked him up.
Okay.
And brought him down here.
So has he been living here?
Yes, he's been living here for about 2 months.
The male who's been injured.
He's my ex-husband.
Does he live here as well?
Yes.
Okay, did those two get into it over something?
I'm sorry to disclose so much, but we were all messing around in the bedroom.
Okay.
And just
prior to this?
And he just snapped, and he was all into it, and I don't know why.
Was everybody drinking today?
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys were all messing around in the bedroom. What precipitated the stabbing?
I think that he couldn't get there, or he couldn't get hard, and I think that he was just intimidated or something.
By your ex? So that's why he's nude? Okay. How did the stabbing occur?
We were just messing around on the bed, and he said it was okay. And the next thing I
said what was okay?
Edward said it was okay that we were messing around.
Okay.
And then he starts stabbing Anthony in the back, and Anthony said, "Ow, stop, what are you doing?" And I just jumped off the bed, and he just kept going on, and Anthony around the bedroom trying to get away.
Okay.
He just kept stabbing him.
Okay, so he was trying to flee while they were in there? Are you injured?
No, I'm not. I told him I was, so he'd leave.
Then he got dressed. He got dressed and he walked out of the house on Princeton Avenue into the gray streets and he ran. The first officers reached the house just before 6 in the morning, sent there by a woman screaming 911 call, and they found what was left. Anthony Brines was alive when they got there, barely. They called immediately for medics. The paramedics did everything that could be done. They got him to a hospital, and at the hospital, despite all of it, Anthony Brines died, 25 years old. A correctional officer, a brother, a friend, dead before most of the city he lived in had even woken up. There is a moment, listener, caught on a responding officer's body camera that holds the whole human weight of that morning in a few seconds. It belongs in the recording alongside the autopsy and timestamps. As the medics worked on Anthony and then moved him, Haley was outside the house in the gray early light. In the chaos of arriving patrol cars and radios, and the camera catches the instant she sees him. She sees a listener. Let me talk to you about something that would have saved me a lot of headaches over the years. It's called Chime, and it's changing the way people bank. Chime is the most rewarding, fee-free banking out there, and it's built for you, not the 1%. It's not like those traditional old banks that nickel and dime you with overdraft and monthly fees. Chime doesn't do that. They've got thousands of fee-free ATMs too, because why should you ever pay just to get your own money? Here's where it gets good. When you set up direct deposit, Chime members can benefit from up to $1,150 in annual rewards, fee-free. You can get 5% cash back in a category you choose, like gas or groceries. Your savings grow with a 3.75% APY, 9 times the national average. And SpotMe lets you overdraft up to $200 fee-free. If you ever need help, it's real humans around the clock. Chime is rated 5 stars by USA Today for customer service. That's why it's America's number one choice for banking. I use this, and you should too. Head to chime.com/obscura. That's chime.com /Obscura. It only takes a few minutes to sign up.
Chime is a fintech, not a bank. Banking services for MyPay and Chime Card provided by Chime's bank partners. Optional products and services may have fees or charges. Stated annual percentage yield and cash back for Chime Prime only. No minimum balance required. Checking account ranking based on a J.D. Power survey published October 20, 2025. For more information on APY rates, MyPay, SpotMe, and travel perks, go to Chime.com/disclosures.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans, and it revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. Think about that gap, listener. Most of us know that reaching out is the smart, healthy thing to do, and yet something still gets in the way. So what can we do as a society to close that gap? Maybe it starts with the small stuff. Checking in on a friend, encouraging someone you care about to consider talking to a professional. If you're thinking about it for yourself, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform with over 30,000 fully licensed therapists who have served more than 6 million people. They do the matching work for you. And if a therapist isn't the right fit, you can switch at any time. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Anthony, the man she had married the autumn before, the man she was leaving and had not finished leaving, gravely wounded and being loaded into the back of the ambulance. Whatever was tangled and unfinished between them, whatever the long, strange summer in that house had done to the two of them, what comes out of her in that moment, it's not complicated at all. It is the oldest sound there is. She comes apart.
It's okay. So he's got a pulse. He's all right. Okay. Okay. Haley, I need you to listen to me, all right? We need to think real, real hard where he would have gone.
He really doesn't know anything down here. We go to the dispensary. We go to the...
Does he have any friends here?
No.
Okay.
He's literally got no one here. Oh, God!
Haley, look at me, okay? Haley, don't look over there. No, I understand. I'm not trying to give you false hope, but I'll tell you too, if he was expired, that ambulance would have never left this location. So he was alive when he left here.
I feel so incredibly guilty. I don't even have a stab wound. Like, I didn't even protect them, you know?
That, well, sounds like it happened really fast.
It did. Okay. You know.
She had spent the night watching the situation she was living in detonate. She had screamed into a phone for help, and now she is in her own front yard, watching a gurney carry her husband away. The body camera simply records it, without mercy and without comment. It is the sound of a person, in real time, understanding that a man she loved is not coming back. Anthony Brines was, by then, already beyond the reach of any of it. He did not know she was there. He did not hear her. He was carried into the ambulance and driven away under lights and siren. And the last thing his home had to give him was the sound of his wife screaming his name as the doors closed. The defense would try to use her to make her part of the machine that supposedly broke Edward Martinez, but she did not stab anyone. The man who did stab someone, Edward Martinez, meanwhile, was running. He had left on foot, and he was moving through the residential streets of Northeast Spokane in the early light, and for a little while, the police did not know exactly where he was. They set up a perimeter, a canine unit, a dog and its handler came to the scene to track him. But in the end, it was not the dog that found him.
Crime check, what are you reporting?
Hi, my name's Katie. I'm a dispatcher with Sacramento Police Dispatch. I've got a caller on the other line whose son called them from Spokane, Washington, saying he was running for his life. Is this the correct phone number?
He's in Spokane, yeah.
Yeah, okay, let me bring her on. Okay, ma'am, you're connected with Spokane Police. Go ahead.
How long ago did your son call you?
At 7:08.
About 5-7 minutes ago, and he said he was running for his life. Did he say where he was at?
That's what he told us, and he said he's at the 1500 block of Wesley Avenue there in Spokane, Washington. There's a park near there, and he was walking in there, running in an alley, and saw some stranger and asked if he could use the phone.
Okay. Their phone. Any reason why he didn't call 911 himself?
Yeah.
What's his first name?
His first name is Edward.
Edward, let me see if we've got any calls from an Edward. One sec. No, it doesn't look like it. Seems odd that he wouldn't call 911 and just call family in another state. Did he say exactly what was going on?
He just said that he was running for his life.
Officers went to the area of Broad Avenue and Helena Street, about 10 blocks from the house. And there they found Edward Martinez, and they took him into custody without incident. He did not fight. The fight, such as it was, had been saved for the unarmed man in the bedroom. He was 19 years old. He was under arrest for murder. At the police station, a detective named Brian Sesnick sat down with Edward Martinez. Brian was the lead investigator, and the conversation he was about to have would be a central piece of evidence in the case. Before he asked anything, Brian read Martinez's rights. Martinez understood and waived them and agreed to talk. And then, on a recording later played in court, he confessed to the murder of Anthony Brines.
Eddie, Edward, when are you prepared to go back?
Eddie.
My name is Brian Sesnick. I'm a detective with the police department. It's Detective Doug Strosol. They tell you this room is recorded, audio and video recorded. Obviously, it's police station.
Just hear my crazy empty thoughts.
Well, the reason I'm here is obviously to, I know what happened. That's my job. My hope is that I can just talk to you and tell me whatever you want. I'm just here to get facts. So what's going to happen? We're going to have someone come in here. We're seeking a search warrant to get photographs, buccal swabs, which is your DNA. They'll be in here. When that's done, you're going to be booked into jail. You're going to be charged with first-degree murder. Okay?
He's dead.
He is dead. You killed him. If you change your mind and decide you want to talk to me about this, you can always send a kite.
Yeah, I don't need a lawyer. Forget that. I know what I did, and I'm not going to deny it.
So before we go into everything, I just want to ask, why did you say you wanted an attorney and then decide to talk? Is it because you didn't think he was dead? I mean, what?
No, it's just... I don't know, thinking too much about it.
Thinking too much about it.
I've been thinking about too much lately, and it's...
I get it.
Gonna be the death of me.
What's going on with your life?
I just been off a lot, and I'm, not doing the right thing, and it took me over mentally, and thought I was going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I literally thought that there's, someone else in my head. I'm not the only one in my head. Might need testing, because I don't know.
Do you have a counselor?
No.
Right. What are the tattoos?
That's a tree of life.
What about the K on your finger?
My girlfriend's got a matching Q.
Oh, okay. Does it mean anything, or is it just because...
Because we're together.
Just because you're together.
I mean, probably not anymore, but...
Yeah.
I guess I was the first one to like her on the profile, and she matched with me. And from there, we just clicked. It just felt so natural talking to her. And, you know, I was at a point in time where I just couldn't trust anybody around me. Even people that I loved sometimes, I just thought were shifty. And I don't know. I just been seeing things in a really f***ed up way. I wasn't going to stop her. I just went with her. And a lot changed after that. I literally just cut everybody off for my new life.
Yeah. Sure. What all did you know about her at that point?
Well, I knew her situation, which she was still living with her husband, who she claims to be divorced with. At first, was okay with the idea of it because I didn't think any. She told me, he's not going to be on no weird. He's not going to do the things that he did do, and did drive me off the edge.
So how was the living situation in the house?
It was fine, you know, for a while. It just functioned. Everything just worked. And there were moments where I would find text messages between them of things I didn't want to see. And that, you know, I kept telling her about it. I keep telling her, and she keeps ignoring it, you know.
I'm curious, have they arrested his wife? Anthony's wife? If not, y'all need to put her in cuffs.
Okay. All right.
And so, for what reason? Apparently, what they said on KH2 on their website said that the two men live together.
All right.
Okay. Anthony's married.
Okay.
That, the suspect is his wife's boyfriend. I just think that she needs to be looked at pretty seriously.
Girl has created this situation. This person who stabbed my nephew, she is just as responsible for this as he is.
He started taking shots of Jane.
How many shots did y'all take? I mean, did you polish off a bottle and just take a couple?
We had like four shots each.
Okay.
It was like one of the bigger Master Jam gin bottles. And we just took that. And we also took a couple of dabs. You know dabs, right?
Well, you tell me, just we're on the same page.
It's like a THC wax, and they get it really hot and inhale it. Yeah.
Okay. So y'all were sitting around doing that. How were things going at first?
At first we were playing, it was pretty weird. We were playing on a Ouija board.
Playing on a Ouija board?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Anthony was talking about how he wants to summon a demon into the house, even though he thinks the house is full of good spirits, and summoned a named Zozo or whatever. He was like begging for Zozo to come and like, you know, be there. And the thing moved to where he wasn't going to be there. Like, they said no. And I asked it a couple things and got some interesting answers. Haley comes on to me, wants me to have sex with her right in front of him. And he's sitting like right there, like on the corner at that distance from the bed. And
so whose room are you in now?
I mean, we're in ours and he's just in there. You know, I was really drunk, so I couldn't, you know, I couldn't work anything up for some reason. I get that drunk sometimes. I can't, my body just goes numb. And I have a
strong... So you couldn't get hard?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. So what happens next?
She starts trying to get me somewhere. It's not working. We start messing around, and then Anthony starts coming up, rubbing mine and her feet. And just, I don't know, like, it made me feel uncomfortable, but, you know, I was already uncomfortable. So right. It just, like, added to it, and I don't know, I started feeling a deep anger inside of me, just building. And like, after a while, I literally took a step in the bathroom, the light wasn't on, and all I can think in my head, as soon as I walk in that bathroom, is like, literally, I went to find a knife, and then lost it.
And then obviously you went back to the bedroom.
Right.
And did you say anything to them?
No, I actually kind of did this pretty sneaky. And that's what I feel bad about, is I was pretty sadistic about it. I took the knife and I literally hid it between my ass cheeks, so no one would see me walking in.
You were completely naked at this point?
Yeah. Okay. And sure enough, when I sat down, I moved it to where I could easily grab it. And I said, well, since you guys are doing this right here, you might as well change the view, you know? And I got him to turn around where Anthony's back was facing me.
So how were they when you walked in?
They were facing me on the bed when I was sitting like this on the bed when I laid down and hit the knife. And then I picked up my phone and, not my phone, I picked up her phone because they said turn a light on. And I turned the light on and used that as a distraction.
The light on the phone?
Mm-hmm. And I just did what I never thought I would do, ever. It was when I came back in the room taking a piss.
Mm-hmm.
And I see him telling me to join in, knowing that I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it was, but just seeing that and thinking about like just everything else adding up, I felt like nothing mattered. And like literally, I said, okay, And I feel bad about it now. Like I feel remorse now. I genuinely miss Anthony because he was an all right friend. I don't know what drove me to take his life.
Much of the sequence is known because Martinez himself laid it out. The encounter, his failure to participate, leaving the room, coming back, getting the knife, positioning them, and of course the 20 stab wounds. He told the police himself that anger had time to build. He told them, without meaning to, that he had time to choose. But underneath all of the gestures towards explanation, the spine of the confession was a man describing, step by step, how he had decided to kill another man. When the case came to trial in the spring of 2023, almost 3 years after the killing, it made the prosecution's story simple. The jury began deliberating on a Monday afternoon, and on Wednesday they came back. They found Edward Martinez guilty of murder in the first degree. The sentencing came in July of 2023, and it was the moment the case stopped being about Edward Martinez and became, at last, about Anthony Brines and the people he left behind. The family asked the judge for the maximum. Judge John Cooney of the Spokane County Superior Court spoke about the thing that he, like everyone who touches on this case, could not get past. The fact that you could stab someone 20 times, he said, is really behind any kind of comprehension. And then he sentenced Edward Martinez to 27 years in prison for the premeditated murder of Anthony Brines. Martinez was 22 by the time he was sentenced, while Anthony Brines will stay forever 25. Martinez will be in his middle 40s when he comes out, older than Anthony Brines ever got to be, with most of his life still ahead of him. Edward Martinez only received 27 years. It doesn't feel like justice.
And he was telling Aaron that he was telling Eddie to stop, that he was hurt, that he's really hurt.
How many times do you think he stabbed him?
Oh, God, so much. Probably before. I thought he was, like, punching him out first. It was probably 15, 16 times between the back and the chest. I can literally hear each of the holes, like, gasping for breath in his lungs. Like,
how big is the knife?
Probably about 4 inches. It was a utility silver knife. It was kind of boxy.
Was it like a 4-inch long blade?
Yeah.
Did you say anything to him?
No. Well, I think I said some words out of fury, but it wasn't any, like, rational words. It was probably just anger.
What did he say?
First thing he said was, please stop. You can talk about this.
What about Haley? What was she doing?
She just kept saying, you're scaring me, you're scaring me.
Just like a light switch. Okay. It was the scariest thing I ever saw.